Good evening, and welcome to What a World. Celebrating diversity and loving it, this is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge.
It tends to take people that are on the edge and push them over the top. Loyalty Islands and that area, Tonga, Fiji, in the Dominoes, what I call the Domino Islands, that's the right rib pain. Papua New Guinea, New Britain, Papua New Guinea, the Kermadec Islands, these areas are the left ribs. Those have been quite active this week. And there's also been reports of at least 4 plane crashes and helicopters that have gone down in that same area in the last 3 days. Kyushu, Japan has had some activity. That's the left shoulder blades. The right earaches have been active. That's Taiwan. They had another event. And the left ears, that's China and India, and they both have had events in the last week. We did have another precursor event on the 20th, which I watch with a very wary eye, because these are the events that tend to be a precursor to very, very large unexpected events. And that's a possibility, again, as we are entering into this next week. And that's really all I have, Nevin.
Well, that's an excellent report. Charlotte, for some reason, the Sci-Fi Channel has been showing volcanic movies. Is there anything going on I should know about?
No, just that the one in Augustine in Alaska is active. We're having some activity in the Cascades beyond St. Helens. We're having activity in the Sandwich Islands, at one of the volcanoes there. Of course, Kilauea in Hawaii is active. We have Popo in Mexico, which is active. There's a lot of volcanic activity going on beyond the offshore volcanic activity that is also taking place. Also, we have in the last short time, in the last 24 hours, actually, I've had at least 2 calls from the people in the New Madrid area asking what's going on, which is very unusual, because I very seldom get calls from these places, and especially 2 of them from Kentucky in one day is just unheard of. And they said they just happened upon my website, unrelated callers. And I told them, I said, that's low back pain, that's chills, that's seismic flu. And I said, be aware, but I said, I'm not really picking up a lot for that area right now.
Are you aware of the whale that was swimming up the river in London?
Yes, I am. And I felt very bad, because I tried to reach someone to tell them what they needed to do. The same thing that happened when we had Humphrey in San Francisco on 3 separate occasions go up into the Bay Area. And in each event, I told them, I said, there's a quake coming. As soon as the quake hits, he will be gone. And he was every time. And
so do you think that the whale in London is being predictive of something about to occur, Charlotte?
Well, I think that he may be picking up sounds that he wasn't used to, and it did cause him to become disoriented and go into shallow water. They, of course, just like the ones here and other areas, they think that they're sick or they have parasites or something. And in every case that I have been involved with, they have been perfectly healthy whales. They just become totally disoriented. And the Massachusetts Cetacean Institute confirmed with me back in 1979 that the fault lines in Oregon ran perpendicular to the coast, and it would be very likely that a whale would follow these fault systems in if there was a precursor building up where they were picking up the sound through the water, as they did before the swarm of earthquakes in Big Bear, California in 1979 that precipitated the 41 sperm whale species on the Oregon coast.
Well, thank you, Charlotte, for that excellent report, and we look forward to next week's report.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Also, folks, we have a toll-free number if you want to call in. It is 1-888-268-4313. And there's always an and, isn't there? What happened on this date of January 22nd in history? You know what? I usually go through a litany of what went on by giving you 6 or 7 dates. But there is only one that really, really stands out. In 1987, a date in history, or rather bizarre situation took place with Robert Bud Dwyer. This person wound up committing suicide on television. An absolutely weird, weird situation. I'll make a long story short, folks. He was involved in some type of embezzlement. He wound up getting involved with taxes, et cetera, that he was collecting on behalf of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Well, apparently what happened, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania overpaid millions of dollars in FICA taxes. Well, this guy gets involved in trying to collect them back and so on and so forth, and he really went after the contract to do this, and he was going to get a $300,000 kickback. Now, what actually happened, he never actually received any money. He never did. But on January 22nd, 1987, the day before his sentencing, Dwyer calls a press conference, and all he says is he's going to provide an update on the situation. So a lot of people figured, well, he's just going to announce his resignation from office, so on and so forth. Well, at the conference, he's agitated, nervous. And he again kept telling everybody he was innocent. But then he turns to people standing to the side of him, and he hands out three envelopes, one of which was a suicide note. I think one went to his wife, one went to the judge, and I think one went to a family friend. Well, he simply turns around, picks up a .357. He had a large manila envelope of some sort, pulls out a .357 revolver, advising those in the crowd, please leave the room if this will offend you. He puts the gun to his head and blows himself away. Now, that has got to be about the strangest thing I've heard yet. I don't know if anyone has ever done that again on national television. Strange and sad events indeed. What we know about the mind and human motivation is minimal at best. Tonight's guest, Lainey Dalfin, may help shed some light on the darker corners of the human psyche. Lainey Dalfin has been interpreting her own and her clients' dreams for years. Her own interest in dreams stems from her early experience in Freudian analysis, where dream work was the primary tool. Now, Lainey has a list of certificates in Gestalt counseling, dream work at the Alfred Adler Institute, member of the Carl Jung Society, board of directors of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, founder and director of the Dream Interpretation Center in Montreal. I got to ask myself, why is someone like this on our little show? Lainey, how are you? And welcome to What a World Radio.
I'm pretty good, Nevin. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's a wonderful having you here. I got a list of questions on dreams. You know, that's a really impressive list of credentials. But before we get into what dreams are made, tell us a little bit about your history. Who are you? How did you get involved in dreams?
Well, I've always been a person who remembers my dreams. And in my early 20s, I gave birth to the first of four daughters who was born with Down syndrome. And not too long after, I became depressed. And I was very fortunate to obtain the care of a very astute Freudian analyst. And when I was in my early 20s, I wasn't too well able to articulate my feelings. But because I'm a person who's always remembered my dreams, I used to go into the sessions always with a dream. And he probably did about 80% of my psychoanalysis, always using the point of entry into how I was feeling on a certain day, with a dream that I would bring in. And so that was the first place that I discovered that actually at the first level, we are problem solving in our dreams. And so the dream at the first level anyway is always about something that you either thought about yesterday or something that happened to you yesterday.
Well, Lainey, There are a lot of people who wind up getting involved in Gestalt psychology, but to get involved with Adler, that is very different.
Well, that's because I'm not a halfway person, and after I learned about Sigmund Freud, somebody suggested that if I liked Freud, I'd really love Frederick Perls, and so I went and earned a certificate in Gestalt counseling, and while I did that, I learned how Frederick Perls looked at dreams, and then I wondered, well, what about another father of psychology? So I went to the Adler Institute to study dreams from an Adlerian perspective, and then I studied Carl Jung, so I became eclectic in my approach to dreams.
Absolutely. I'd like the audience to fully comprehend that. The person who is speaking to us this evening, folks, is extremely well-learned. You don't just go into the Albert Adler Institute, believe me. Well, you put a lot of work into it. And I have a little question off the wall. Are you originally from Canada?
Yeah, I'm from Montreal.
Ah, okay. And is that where we're calling this evening?
That's where you're calling, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Up here in chilly Montreal.
I could hear the accent, and I thought, you know, at first I thought, well, gee, she must have been born in Canada. Lainey, before we get into the dreams, I'd like you to tell the folks out there, how can they get in touch with you, give them the name of your website, and a little bit about getting together with people. How do they go about it?
Well, the internet site is dreamsdocometrue.ca. Instead of .com, it's .ca for Canada. And it's all one word, dreams do come true. And the name of my book, which you can buy through the site, is called Dreams Do Come True, Decoding Your Dreams to Discover Your Full Potential. And I called it Dreams Do Come True because I want to suggest that change is possible. And every different reaction to any different situation that life throws you appears in the dream. So we are problem solving in our dreams, and the solution to what you want to do about something that's bugging you comes to you in your unconscious before it gets to your conscious. So that's what I do. And people book appointments with me on the internet, and then they telephone me, and I accept Visa and MasterCard, and I help them uncover why you had a certain dream on a certain night.
Okay, so then people can consult with you directly over the phone. They don't have to come to Canada.
Yeah.
Very good. You know, you have a lot of extensive material on your website.
I do.
However, I have a few questions that I couldn't find any answers to on your website.
Okay.
So, some of these are quite, you know, since I got you as a captive audience, and I'm very interested in some of the things that have happened to me with dreams, I'm going to ask you some questions that I really couldn't find any material on your website. The first one is nightmares. What are they? And why do they plague some people more than others? Because, Lainey, I have had nightmares all my life. For the past 2 years, they stopped.
Uh-huh.
However, up to about 2 years ago, I had nightmares at least, maybe once or twice a month.
But a nightmare is a good thing, you know, Nevin.
They are?
A nightmare is a sign of good, solid health. And that's because we're adept at hiding things from ourselves during the day. It's called welcome to the human condition. We really don't like looking at things, and we're very good at avoiding, but your unconscious never, ever lies to you. And if there's something going on in your life that needs your attention and that you're avoiding, your unconscious is going to look after you by giving you a nightmare. And what it does with the nightmare grabs your attention. And once you've remembered the nightmare, then you know your unconscious has done a healthy and good job, because it wants to grab your attention to get you to look after what it is that's bothering you that you're not taking care of.
Well, now, a very strange thing occurred, Lainey. The nightmares stopped around the same time that my wife became seriously ill.
Mm-hmm.
They just stopped. And why? I mean, why are you? I would think that the nightmares would increase, but in fact, they went on dead stop when my wife became seriously ill.
Mm-hmm. And you know, did she suddenly become seriously ill?
Pardon?
Did she suddenly become seriously ill?
Yes, it was all very sudden, and it was kind of like right out of left field.
Uh-huh.
She's fine today, and the past 6 months have shown a dramatic, dramatic improvement. But I was just wondering, why would the nightmare stop when my wife gets sick?
Well, you know, because I help people attach the dream to why you had that dream this week, it's kind of easier to work with if you're discussing a dream that you had this week for me to help you uncover why you had that certain dream this week. Because that's what I do, is I help people decode the meaning of a dream.
Well, we've got one for you. You know, lady, when my wife knew that you were coming on, she said, hey, I got a dream. So I'll get to it in a minute, but I want to get to lucid dreaming first. We hear an awful lot about it. What is it?
Lucid dreaming is when you become conscious while you're in a dream. And so, in other words, you kind of semi-wake up inside the dream and you become aware that you are dreaming. And some people can do that, but, you know, I think the good thing about lucid dreaming, for example, is that you get an opportunity, for example, if someone is chasing you, then you can manipulate the dream so you can decide to turn around and face your pursuer. But similarly, there's another kind of lucidity that I invite people to participate in, and that is if you have a same kind of a dream, for example, where someone is chasing you and you are not a lucid dreamer, there's nothing that stops you from, when you are awake during the day the next day, to make a conscious decision that the next time you have a dream that someone is chasing you, that you're going to decide to turn around and face your pursuer. Because really, dreaming is just another form of thinking, by the way. Dreaming is just thinking. It's like when you go to sleep at night, your brain doesn't turn off. And it's just another form of thinking. And so the same way as you can change your mind in the night, you can change your mind in the day as well, and you'll still shift into some kind of problem solving, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me give you an example, and you'll kind of see what I do just by the example, if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, here's a simple dream and a great example about that it's really true. A picture is worth a thousand words. There was a woman who had a dream that she had a piglet stuck to her breast. And that was the whole dream, just that she had a piglet stuck to her breast. And because I work with problem solving, the very first question I said was, oh, you must have been freaking out, running around trying to get the piglet off you. And she said, no, actually, I was just standing there looking at it. And so now we know that no matter what specific current situation she's trying to problem solve, we already know that she's underreacting to the situation.
Oh, absolutely.
By the simple fact that she's got a piglet stuck to her and she's not racing around in the dream trying to get it off, right? And so I asked her, what did you do the day before the dream? What did you do? Who'd you get together with? Where'd you go? And so she said that she went shopping with her sister. And I asked her very quickly, why don't you tell me, what are the first two or three things that come to your mind when you think about your sister? Like, what kind of character is she? And so she named off a few things that didn't really fit. And then I said, well, what else happened to you? And she said, oh, she ran into her ex-boyfriend that day as well. And I said, why don't you tell me, what are the first few things that come to your mind when you think about him? And the very first thing that came out of her mouth is, he's such a dependent little pig. You see? Because we use play on words. Isn't that great?
That's classic.
Isn't that great?
That's really
it's
classic.
Terrific. And we use play on words and puns in our dreams all the time, the same way as we do in our waking life. And so I asked her, and what happened when you saw him? She said, well, he's making a party for himself, and he asked me to prepare the food for the party. So now we understand the breast is there because she called him dependent, and it's also there because he asked her to prepare the food for a party he was making. And I thought that was great. I said, oh, that's really nice. Are you going to prepare the food? And she said, I don't want to prepare the food for this guy's party. I don't want to go to this party. I don't want to see this guy anymore. And so I said, oh, and did you tell him? And she said, no. So now we understand why she had the nightmare. I guess she had something to get off her chest.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of the way dreams work, because that's what I was saying about nightmares, about when you're underreacting to something or avoiding looking after, taking care of business in your daylight, in the daylight, the unconscious will bring the situation forward for you because it is trying to grab your attention. And, you know, as soon as she figured out what that piglet dream was about, I don't have to tell you who was the first person she telephoned to let him know that she's not going to be cooking the party, the food for the party.
Wonderful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. All right. Let me give you a this little dream that my wife had, I think, fairly recently. It's very, very short. In the dream, she says, I asked her to come and see something I had purchased for our garden. And it was a stone statue of a frog, which I had placed, according to her, across from the statue of the Buddha. And we do keep, usually have a statue of the Buddha around us, and I do often put it in the garden. Got any ideas?
Well, I'd really have to speak to the dreamer. And let's talk about why. Because why don't you tell me, what are the first two or three things that come to your mind when you think about a cat, for example? Tell me, what comes to your mind when you think about a cat?
Dog, house, fire.
Dog, house, and fire?
Yes.
Why fire?
I don't know. Those were the three things that popped into my head.
Do you like cats?
I'll tolerate them. I'm not particularly fond of them.
Okay, good. You tolerate them, but you're not particularly fond of them. And I guess you think about a dog because the cat is the opposite, right? Is that what it is?
I think so. And I have a little dog that I dearly love. And I don't know how else to respond other than to say that I'll tolerate cats. I'm not crazy about them, and I do like dogs.
Okay. And so if you ask me about cats, then I would say to you that I think they're very aloof and independent. And I also don't really like them because I'm more a snuggly kind of affectionate person, and I haven't found cats to be very affectionate. And now my daughter, my youngest daughter, if you ask her about cats, she would say to you that she absolutely loves them, but they make her feel claustrophobic, and that's because she's allergic to them. So she might be dreaming about a cat if she's going out with a guy who she thinks she's in love with, but really he's not very good for her. And you might be dreaming about a cat because you met somebody, you know, because your wife invited somebody to spend a few days with you who's a friend of hers that you tolerate, but you're not really very fond of.
Oh, okay. I get the connections now.
And for me, I might dream about a cat if I spent some time yesterday with a person who I think is aloof and independent, and someone who I don't really connect with that much. You know, or maybe I dream about a cat during times when I need to be more aloof and independent. So that's the reason why all those dream dictionaries could kind of go in the garbage. Because you need to ask the dreamer, like we would have to ask your wife, what it is that comes to her mind when she thinks about a frog. Because you said that you have stone Buddhas in your garden.
Yes, we do.
You do. And I wonder what her associations are about a frog, and whether how she felt in the dream, and if she was happy that you were bringing a frog into the garden or not.
I think I can almost answer that question. My wife is very involved in Native American concepts and these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the frog to her represents cleansing.
Excellent.
So that's kind of, I'm simply going by knowing her so well. It is a symbol for cleansing.
Right, and so it sounds like a very positive dream. It sounds like you were bringing some cleansing into the house or around the house. That certainly doesn't sound like a bad dream, does it?
Oh, no, not at all. I had, even when she first told me, I knew it was something of a very pleasant nature. I used to, when I had a chance, I would build small ponds for her, and we put the Buddha around it, and she knew that at one time I had made an extremely large pond, and I did have stone statues of frogs. But again, the association for her is not only the garden, but the ponds I built, and the frog representing a cleansing of some sort.
And right, and when we have a pleasant, calm, good feeling dream like that, we typically have them, either it's a mirror of exactly how you really are feeling that particular week, or sometimes you'll have a dream like that because it is not how you're feeling and you need to kind of get a jump start on feeling good again. And if you've been down for a while, you might give yourself a dream like that to remind yourself about what it feels like to feel peaceful.
You brought up the word mirror, and I had a very, very profound dream about a mirror. In the dream, I had an opportunity to look in the mirror, but who I saw was not me, but a much younger man by almost 35, maybe 40 years, who was dressed in a period of maybe 1910, 1920. Is this normal or?
Well, you know, all the fathers of psychology, they disagreed on many things, but one thing they did agree on, and that is that all the parts of the dream represent different parts of your own psyche. And so, Carl Jung said, you know, it's your movie, you're the director, you're the producer, and you are all the players. And what happens is you take the part that you feel the most comfortable with on a certain day, and you give out all the other parts of the dream to different parts of yourself. And so, and of course, it really is just thinking, and all of the material is coming out of your own unconscious, your own filing cabinet, your own database for those people that are into computers. And so you were looking at a younger part of yourself. And if it's a part of yourself that you didn't recognize, then that's probably because we do have certain parts of ourselves that we don't recognize as much. For example, are you a person who, when you're angry with someone, expresses it easily, or are you someone that keeps your feelings inside?
Oh, I'm pretty much expressive.
Okay, and so the part of you that has the potential to hold back and keep things in is not that familiar to you. And that, you see what I mean? And so when you see people in your dreams who you don't recognize or you feel you don't know, they're just the parts of yourself that you're not that familiar with, or Frederick Perls would have said, you're underinvested or unexercised parts.
Well, I think what you're saying is that regardless of what you dream, it is some part of you that you either are recognizing or not recognizing. It's either one side or the other.
Yeah, and very often those parts might be the solution to the issue. Like, for example, I know someone who it was brought up in a home where it was considered disrespectful to speak up, right? So she couldn't look at her father when he was yelling at her when she was a kid and say, excuse me, but I don't like how you're talking to me right now, because that would have been considered disrespectful. And so she learned that it was, better to shut up than to speak up. That was what she became more exercised in staying quiet and not expressing herself. And then when she turned 45 years old, one time her husband opened up a big mouth to her during an argument. And she stood there shaking in her boots as if it was her father, because we all become very accustomed to certain kinds of behavior since we're kids. And the problem is that we get locked in the habitual reactions that we have to life situations. And so she went to sleep and dreamt about an aunt of hers who was had been dead for 15 years. And when I worked with this woman, I asked her, why don't you tell me very quickly, what are the first two or three things that come to your mind when you think about that aunt? And the first thing that came out of her mouth was, she had such a big mouth, that aunt. And if she didn't like you, she had no problem about telling you. So, you see, the aunt comes into her dream because she represents the part of that dreamer that has the potential to speak up to her husband. And her unconscious is asking her to access that ability that she has to speak up and maybe express how she felt when he was yelling at her.
Then if I'm an extroverted person during my waking state, there's a good possibility I might in fact be introverted during the dream state. Is that kind of what you're saying?
It would depend on the problem that you're trying to solve. And let me give you a great example. The unconscious is functioning exactly like the conscious does. So when you get up in the morning, you know, you have work on your desk and you prioritize who you have to phone, who you have to email, and what you need to do with your day. And if you had 700 things happen to you today, when you go to sleep tonight, your unconscious is also going to prioritize, but it's going to prioritize what bugged you the most. And all your dreams tonight, even though they may seem different, are going to be you testing out different possible solutions and reactions to a very specific current issue that you are attempting to problem solve. And so that's what I do, is I help people uncover what is the specific issue that you are trying to problem solve this particular night. And I help you, once we've done that, once we found the mirror, I help you uncover what a solution looks like when it comes in the form of a picture. Like sometimes, you know, someone's dreaming about an aunt that has passed away, and they might think, oh, does it mean I'm going to die, or does it mean that person was visiting me? But I look at dreams from a psychological perspective, and my point is that you'd want to discover what characteristics does that person have that you might need in this thing that's bugging you today.
You have a kind of a major heading in one of your articles on death and dreaming. I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about the meaning of death itself. If you're dreaming of yourself dying, might that be an indication that you yourself are about to leave the planet or
no.
someone else?
No, because, you know, in the example of the piglet dream, as you saw, the same way as we use puns and play on words, we in the daytime, we use them at night all the time. So if I say to you that I tripped in front of a whole bunch of people on the street today and I was so embarrassed, Nevin, I thought I was going to die. Now, if I talk like that, if you talk like that, then I might go to sleep tonight and dream that I'm dying. And it's not because I'm dying, it's because I'm processing the fact that I was so embarrassed today. So, if you hear these parents that say to their kids, get over here, I'm going to kill you. You know, if you use expressions like that, then also that, you know, child might go to sleep tonight and dream that someone's trying to kill them, or you might go to sleep and dream that you're trying to kill somebody. So you always have to treat each dream individually, and you want to ask yourself questions like, how did the dream make me feel? You know, maybe a relationship ended, and maybe a person is dreaming that they're dying, right, or that they're going to die because they feel so sad that the relationship ended. Or maybe the death is representative of the ending of the relationship.
My wife has regular dreams of lots of relatives who have died, and I never dream of my relatives or anyone who has died. Why?
Well, maybe you don't remember. You might very well be dreaming about relatives who have passed on, but maybe you don't remember. You know?
She seems to have constant conversations with her mom, her dad, so on and so forth. I've had maybe one or two instances. I had one instance of a dream. This was about 10, 15 years ago of my grandmother. It was a bizarre situation. I turned the light out, went to turn over, but I swear before I my head even touched the pillow, all of a sudden I found myself in this cave, and the noise was just outrageous. I mean, it sounded like a foundry. And out of nowhere, my grandmother appears to me, and in the dream she was speaking in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me that I had to get out of there, and I searched and searched and quickly found a way out and then woke up. That's about the only time that I can remember of actually being specifically dreaming of
right.
a person who had died.
See, and if I would hear a dream like that, and if this was the week that you had the dream, then I would definitely be asking you what situation you think you got yourself into that you need to get out of.
Good question.
What dreams do. They just, it's just a language, and it's the same thing as learning another language, but it's the language of metaphors and pictures. That's all it is. It's not, you know, believe it or not, it's not rocket science. It's just starting to talk in metaphor, that's all. And that usually will give it to you, like you hear somebody saying, oh, I opened up to, I was trying to talk and no sound came out. And, you know, I had no voice. Or, you know, and so you want to ask that person, well, what do you think you need to say to somebody that you're having trouble coming out with? Or you'll hear somebody say, I was trying to run and my legs were stuck. And so the question to that person is, well, what do you think is going on this week that you're trying to run away from? What is it you're trying to get away from that you can't get away from?
There's a lot of discussion over the past few years about the possibility of dreams being some sort of out-of-body experience. What is your feeling about that? How do you interpret that kind of statement?
Well, I look at dreams, as I say, my expertise is looking at dreams in a problem-solving, pragmatic, down-to-earth kind of way. And that is what I do with dreams. I help people understand how does this dream relate to what's going on in my life this week. And that is exactly what I do. But I also believe I'm a spiritual person, and I also, besides even being spiritual, I also think that the unconscious is extremely sophisticated. And I'm sure that we as human beings are capable of many things simultaneously. And so I'm sure there's more going on than we know. But my area that I look at is a psychological problem-solving perspective. That's what I do.
Uh-huh. But you are saying that there are possibilities of other things occurring within dreams. Besides.
Well, I think that when I have to go on a business trip to go speaking, and I need to go away from my husband and my four daughters, that I'm leaving my maternal side, and I might dream about my father the night before I leave out of town, and that might be because he represents the male business side of me that I need to access, because that's the part of me that gets on the plane, is that male business side of me. That's who gets on the plane, and that's who I need to access to help me go out of town and away from my maternal side. But how do you and I know that it's not also really my father visiting me? We don't know. And I think maybe both are true sometimes.
I think you're right. You know, dreams and the human psyche is so complex that I could certainly see an opportunity for a person to be using the dream state for more than just one reason. In other words, yes, it's problem solving, but it might also include at the same time many other things, like we do during the day. I may take on, for instance, washing the dishes, but that doesn't mean I'm not thinking about some of the HTML I'm trying to write for a web page today.
Exactly. I agree with you completely. And I'm sure that we are very highly sophisticated, and I'm sure that we are multitasking in our sleep as well.
Well, you mentioned on your website the concept of, I think it's keeping a dream journal of some sort. How do you go about this?
Well, the first thing you can do is make a decision that you want to remember a dream. And the next thing, for sure, is to leave a paper and pen beside the bed. And if you really want to, you can even lie in bed before you fall asleep and try and visualize yourself waking up in the morning to record the dream. And usually, if you ask yourself and make a decision that you want to remember a dream, you probably will within a few days. It's usually the way it works.
Is there any value to, instead of, I actually tried what you're suggesting. I actually one time wrote down something, a word, thinking that, you know, it's just too lazy to wake up completely. So I just wrote the word down, and thinking the next day would keep me in tune with what the dream was about. And I looked at the word, and for the life of me, I couldn't put anything.
You couldn't get it.
That word.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so you're better off to write down more than a word, I suppose.
Is there any value in using a tape recorder as opposed to...
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great to use a tape recorder. I've done that sometimes. And then you really get a dreamy voice. And you can get a lot of detail like that when you're talking into a tape. It's a lot easier than writing, especially if it's like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed, Lainey, is that my sleep pattern is a little bit unusual. I go to bed around 9 o'clock at night. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I work till about 7. Then I go back to bed and get up about 10:30, 11 o'clock. I noticed that I have a tendency to do a lot more dreaming on that second sleep period than the first. On the first, I hardly ever dream.
Right.
But the second one...
Yeah, well, because we have longer REM cycles the closer we get to the morning. And the REM sleep is where you're getting more vivid dreams, and it's closer to the morning, and so you wake up more. You wake up, and it's easier to remember then, you know? But you still have to write down the dreams as soon as you get up, because once you get up and start walking around, they disappear pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, they really do. I mean,
yeah.
There are times when I would be absolutely positive, for instance, that I'm going to remember a dream. And at times I've actually gotten up out of bed, maybe make a sandwich or something, thinking of the dream, go back to bed, and the next morning it's gone. It's just gone.
Yeah. Well, there's a memory function that's not operating at the same capacity when you're asleep as when you're awake. And so there's a physiological reason why you don't remember your dreams. You have to definitely make a decision to do so and definitely write it down, because it won't stay there if you don't write it down. And it's a good idea to write it down, because the truth is you figure out what you want to do about something that's bugging you, and the solution comes to you in your unconscious, obviously before it gets to your conscious. So what you get for looking at your dreams and analyzing them is you can propel your problem-solving skills.
Some people talk during the night. Is talking, the talking that they do, is that related to what they're dreaming?
It's part of the dream, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've tried a number of, my wife is a great talker in her dreams. Doesn't talk much during the day, pretty much like you suggested before. You know, she's a very quiet person. But boy, sometimes at night she'll just jabber away. However, no matter how hard I attend, I can't understand what she's saying. Is it making sense to her?
Yes, I'm sure it is while she's in the dream. Of course it's making sense to her.
Often it just sounds like, I don't know, a form of gibberish coming out. Once in a while, there's a clear word, but it, it, almost unintelligible, but she does it quite a bit.
Right.
And like
yeah, she's just expressing herself, and I'm sure that the words are very clear inside the dream.
Can dream analysis be helpful for relationships, say with a couple?
100%.
Whoa, that's a fast answer.
That's 100% answer. Couples who talk about their dreams, really, really, it's a very intimate thing to do. And your dreams are very revealing about what you're really thinking about. And it's a wonderful way for couples to have an opportunity to share what's really going on for them.
All right, let's touch on that a little bit. Some dreams are so intimate to the dreamer. Such as sexual dreams, this kind of thing. When a person is having dreams of sexuality, sex with someone else, what is this telling you about the person?
Well, I mean, it depends, again, on the situation and what the dream is about. It definitely depends on what the dream is about. I mean, I've had people come to me with a sexual dream, and it was because they're using, you know, maybe they haven't had sex in a while, and maybe their unconscious is reminding them that it's time to be horny.
Ah.
And it wakes the feeling up and reminds them that they should go make themselves feel good. So sometimes the dream is giving you a jump start to feeling good. And then sometimes you're dreaming about having sex with a stranger, and maybe it's not really about a stranger. Maybe you're just using that stranger as a metaphor for your mate. Do you see what I mean? Because you don't, you know,
yes.
You might be thinking about your mate, but the unconscious doesn't always work like that. The unconscious is not literal. And so you could be dreaming about somebody else, but really it's about your husband.
There are a lot of books on the market about dream symbols. Is there a common element? I find it a little bit difficult to believe, but what do you think about it?
I think that your unconscious is an incredible database that is holding every single memory and association that you have ever had since you're born. And it would be absolutely impossible. It's as unique as a fingerprint. And it's absolutely impossible to look up in a book what a cat means for you and what a cat means for me. You would have to talk to the dreamer. And now we have certain similar images that appear in our dreams as human beings, like, you know, every now and then you'll get people who talk about, their teeth falling out in the dream. But the point is, why did you have that dream this week? And what does it mean for you? Some people, when their teeth fall out in the dream, they're happy about it. And they think, they like the feeling of their tongue on their gum. And other people are frightened. So it depends on, you know, what it is that's going on in your life this week as to why you use certain images that made you feel a certain way. You know, maybe somebody's teeth were falling out last week because they had something to come out with. Maybe they had something to say that they weren't coming out with. And so the dream, there's teeth falling out in the dream because they need something to come out of their mouth. Maybe somebody else just turned 40 or 50 or is going through some kind of transition, and they're using the metaphor of teeth falling out because all of us, when we're 6 or 7 years old and we're going through some kind of transition, our teeth fall out. So maybe they're using it that way. Maybe a third person is using their teeth falling out because they're worried about how they're looking, you know, or there is something about vanity.
Well, this is kind of an important topic. Besides the information we're getting from you this evening on dream interpretation, what's important is that people come to understand that there is a lot of material available to them that simply has no meaning in their life. People are making money, Lainey, on selling books that are composed of, I don't know, they make it up. And I've seen it.
Right.
And so, you know, when I do a show, I try to encourage the audience and the guests to kind of put their heads together to make sure that they're not going down these strange false paths where they're going to bump into a wall.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that I wrote my book. I wrote the book because I wanted to teach the general public the series of interview questions that you can ask yourself in order for you to end up saying what the dream is about. It's not that the book should tell you what the dream is about. It's that you should tell the book what the dream is about.
Absolutely.
And you just need to know what questions you should ask yourself that help you do the investigation and uncover why you had a certain dream on a certain night. And more importantly, to understand how to recognize a solution. Because who's better to give you advice on something that's bothering you than yourself? No one is better to give you advice than yourself.
Absolutely. You know, I tried to give that message out, you know, to go within. The problem that we have nowadays, though, Lainey, is people are looking for quick solutions. And so a book that has a whole bunch of symbols in it and gives you definitions for each one is very attractive to this type of person who's looking for a quick cure or a quick pill to get better.
Right.
Instead of taking the time and reading a book such as yours and really getting involved.
Right, but once you know how to do it, it's not that difficult, and it really doesn't take that long at all, because there's not, you know, there's just really a series of interview questions that you need to ask yourself, and you get it pretty quickly once you know how to do it, and it's really fun for people who like to play games and who like mysteries and things like that. They'll love dream work. It's great.
There is a statement. It comes right from your website. I want to read it to you and spend about a minute covering it. Quote, "And who are we to say that dreams about loved ones are not, in fact, their spirits returning? Does the child in the mother's womb realize there is a whole world of people, cars, cities, happiness, joys, starvation, wars, and sadness going on right outside its existence?"
Exactly.
Okay. There are a lot of people who are convinced that when they have a dream of a certain person who may have passed on, that in fact they are communicating with a loved one. And so I guess what you're saying is, yes, that is possible.
Well, of course it's possible. How, you know, I'm in no position to say, you know, whether there's the souls of people who we love aren't coming to visit us sometimes. Of course, I'm sure that sometimes they are, but I don't think they always are, and I think even when they do, that still doesn't discount that still seeing that person still represents a certain part of your psyche, a certain ability and potential that you have, and I also don't think it's an accident when certain people appear in our dreams. They appear for a reason. Because we're pretty sophisticated, and we don't just choose something out of nothing.
In your website, you said, in our dreams, we try out these new reactions to current or impending issues. It almost sounds like a testing field.
It is a testing field. It's a very safe place to practice. Very safe place to practice. And that's what we do. I call it in the book, going to the gym. You know, when you first go to the gym and you start using some muscles, it hurts for a little bit because you're not accustomed to it. So like that woman who was speaking up to her husband for the first time, it felt very strange and it was very uncomfortable. But once she got used to it, then it didn't bother her so much anymore. She got accustomed to speaking up more. And that's what it is. That's kind of what it's about. And people who don't know how to say no, they practice saying no a couple of times. And it's very strange at first for them to refuse somebody something. But you know, they do it once, they do it twice, and you become more accustomed to doing it. And that's what the whole point is. You don't need to be stuck in the same behavior and the same reaction to every different situation that comes into your life. You don't always have to be anything.
We only have a few seconds left. Go ahead and wrap it up. What do you want to tell the audience about your book or whatever?
Well, I welcome people to go to dreamsdocometrue.ca. That's all one word, dreamsdocometrue.ca. And I talk to people on the phone all the time, and they can order the book off the site. There's a secure page there to order the book as well.
Oh, I've got one more question before you hang up. In your book, is there a structured system of some sort that a person could follow?
Yes, okay. There absolutely is a very easy to follow structure about how you can uncover why you have a certain dream on a certain night, and a whole series of questions you can ask yourself.
Lainey, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
It was wonderful having you on the show. Folks, go to the website, and I'm telling you, do it. This Lainey knows what she's talking about. Lainey, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I forgot to mention to you that I will be back on the air in about 10 minutes. We're going to take a little break. We have two authors joining us. It's let me hope I get these names right. It's John St. John and Melanie Marie Ridner. They are upcoming authors. They both have books, and they're going to give us a little blurb tonight on what the book is about and a little promotion. I like to promote authors as much as I can, so bear with us. Come on back, and I'll get back. I'll be back on the air in about 10 minutes. I need a little break here. Welcome back, everybody. We're back online, trying to get our act together as usual. We had a wonderful evening with Lainey Dolphin on Dream Analysis, and into our second hour now. First thing we're going to do is we're going to have an astrology report from Jill Campanella, and then we're going to follow that up with a couple of short interviews with some authors, Mr. John St. John and Ms. Melanie Marie Ridner. But first, before we get to the author section, let's invite Jill onto the show. Jill, how are you this evening?
Oh, wonderful. How are you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Did you have a good day today?
I had a great day. Beautiful day today.
Was it warm where you are?
It was wonderful. It was warm. The sun was shining. The sky was blue.
And you're telling me that you had nice temperatures, right?
Well, it was nice for winter.
And exactly what kind of temperature did you have, Jill?
Freezing.
Oh, because I happen to be living in the same trailer with you, and my fear about froze.
It was cold, but very beautiful.
All right. Jill, how about giving the audience an astrology report? What's going on? What do the stars tell you?
Well, Venus and Mars, the yin and yang energy of the solar system, are now entrined with each other tonight, as well as for the next few days. It's a good time to engage in pleasant social gatherings. Even though Venus is retrograde, this is still a general and loving aspect for relationships. And as the moon entered the intense and sexual side of Scorpio this morning, things could definitely heat up physically with your significant other. Early this afternoon, the planet Mercury entered the sign of Aquarius. This is an excellent time not only to develop original ideas, but offers opportunities to discuss them with others of like mind. Soon to join the Sun, representing creativity, and Chiron, representative of healing old wounds, it is likely that new thoughts and methods for healing will come to the forefront. By the way, if you know the house that is ruled by Aquarius in your natal chart, that's the area where you'll want to focus your attention. On the 27th, Saturn puts the brakes on the winged messenger through an opposition, and this could bring arguments in favor of a more traditional approach. So, as of today, both the Moon and Mercury are in fixed signs, as is our sun, and the slower moving orbs of Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Chiron. The basic mode of operation of the fixed signs is to capture energy, not disperse it. This powerful change continues to build pressure for many of us throughout the year. If your natal chart is heavy with fixed signs, that's Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius, the best tactic is to honor that energy by planning the change that you want to see, rather than resisting the change and have it thrust upon you suddenly and without preparation. In closing tonight, I'd like to share a quote that I found attributed to John Cage. I can't understand why people are frightened of new ideas. I'm frightened of the old ones. Good night.
Thank you, Jill. Excellent. Yeah, I got a comment on that last quote. Yeah, I can't understand why people are frightened of new ideas. It's the old ones that are really scary, folks. Let's make some more wars. There's a pretty good old one thing to be frightened of. Let's not bother taking care of the infirm, the aged, or children. Let them fend for themselves. There's another old idea that can go out the window. Those kinds of old ideas do frighten me, and I am looking forward to some new ideas, which, by the way, folks, Blogging Broadcasting Service presents many, many intriguing new ideas. You know, I was almost going to say on a daily basis, but it's on a minute-by-minute basis. I know because I work with the producer, my best friend, Don Newsom. Folks, we are now headed into the second part, and we're going to get a couple of authors online. And the first author is Mr. John St. John. Welcome to What a World Radio. John, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, terrific. Thank you. Good evening.
John, you have a book, Working Class Hero. I think that's the name of it. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book, John? What is it about?
It's basically an autobiography of my life. 55 years and never a dull moment. A lot of people would compare it to the very similar to the movie Forrest Gump, because everything and all the adventures and misadventures in my life seem to like epitomize the life and times of the period. But different to Forrest Gump's, where his was a box of chocolates, mine's more like the ice cream Rocky Road.
John, what led you to write this book? I mean, how did it come about?
So far in my life, I've had, let's put it this way, I'll say, I've had over 40 jobs, 35 cars, 4 kids, 3 careers, 2 marriages, a leopard in a pear tree, and I've moved house 35 times.
You've moved 35 times?
Moved home, yeah, 35 times over 2 continents.
Why? I mean, obviously, John, you moved around a lot. You did a lot. Why? How come so much stimulation?
I think, I was an ordinary sort of happy-go-lucky kid up to the age of 10. And then my father died when I was 10, died of cancer. And little did I know then that my whole life would be turned upside down from then on. And subsequently, I was the youngest of 4 boys. And my nearest peer was 10 years older than me. So they all shared all the wealth between them, and I got a new bike. So subsequently, I had to leave home by the time I was 16, and from then on, fending for myself, I just kept getting into job after job after job to try and keep up to look after myself. And it just led into a career that's been absolutely amazing. If I hadn't read the book and put it down on paper, I wouldn't believe it, that it was my life. It's just so, it's like 10 lifetimes in one. It makes the whole movie of Forrest Gump look like a 3-hour preview, I tell you that.
Yeah, it's quite a revelation, isn't it, when you start putting your life down on paper and start taking a look at what's really gone on. You start listing it. The title is curious.
Okay, yeah. The people that published the book for me came up with the title. Like I went through about a dozen, but I'll give you some example. People have probably heard of, you know, the swinging 60s, but half of the book, of course, happens in England, where I was born. And I used to have a Carnaby Street store. A lot of people are probably familiar with Carnaby Street in London. And I had one of those stores in the swinging 60s. From then on, I became, went into the hotel trade and actually worked at one of the biggest theater restaurants in Europe. Then I ended up having a hotel and country inn of my own. From then on, I went to be a fashion photographer for a few years. I then ended up as a Rolls-Royce chauffeur for an Iranian. I've worked in the antique exporting trade. I moved over to Canada as a professional photographer, right in the middle of the language wars in Quebec, which is an amazing adventure on itself. Getting out of that, I moved to Ottawa and ran the biggest limousine service in Canada's national capital for 10 years, and then ended up opening a metaphysical store. So that's just a taste of what my life's been about.
John, you mentioned the language wars. Our audience may not be familiar with the...
Oh, okay. Yeah, we weren't familiar with that either. We emigrated from England very naive. We came over to Canada for a holiday and was offered a job here when we came over. And we came right into this French-English war in Quebec where they banned all the English signs. And we spent 2.5 years where no one would speak to us because we were from England and we spoke only English.
That had to be pretty rough, trying to exist in a place where you don't understand the language.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. I mean, it's like the pendulum swings both ways. I dare say it's the same for the French and English-speaking Canada. But sometimes the pendulum can swing too far. And when they start ripping all the English signs down and painting all over the signs in the car park and stuff, duct taping the word men out of toilets and things, it gets a little bit hard. And it was quite an experience to live through, but... That's been my whole life. It's just been totally weird experiences. And most of it has been surrounded by literally celebrities.
You're in British Columbia right now?
That's right, yeah.
How did you wind up in British Columbia?
Again, that's where you have to read the book. It's a story to do with a revelation and a vision. After running the biggest limousine service in Ottawa for nine, 10 years, I got so fed up with the corruption that I was seeing. I mean, we worked out at the Chateau Laurier, which is the main hotel next to the Parliament there in Canada's capital. And so we did all the ambassadors, all the ministries and all the politicians, did all the rock stars, the movie stars, pop musicians, the sports celebrities, CEOs, all the big corporations, the whole lot, and even some royalty. And the more I did, every year, it seemed to be getting worse and worse, and the corruption was just phenomenal. It doesn't matter what country in the world you could be in, you know, whether it's the US, whether it's England or Canada. Politicians seem to be the same, and they say power corrupts, and it really does. And to witness that firsthand was quite nerve-wracking, to say the least.
John, you mentioned a revelation, I think you said vision. What was the revelation?
Well, my wife and I and oldest daughter and son-in-law, we used to do like a meditation thing 2 nights a week. I think it's the only thing, to tell you the truth, that kept me sane. And we had it one night. It very rarely bothered me. It was mainly my wife and daughter that had this sort of channeling experiences. But one night in particular, I went to bed after one of these sessions, and I lay there, and suddenly the whole room became this like, purple glow, and I was looking at my arm and my fingers, and there's like an aura all around them. And it was amazing because my wife was fast asleep, and she's usually a light sleeper, but I was watching this, and then it just disappeared, and I actually went to sleep. But then I had this amazing vision of a pyramid of humanity, I suppose, and I went to this building from room by room by room, and I was told all these things and shown all these things, and I went downstairs and about 3 o'clock in the morning and wrote down everything that I saw. In fact, I even built a three-dimensional model of it.
You did?
And, yep. And I just knew that we had to, it was all to do with the code of humanity that's been lost. And we just knew that we have to, I was earning over $1,000 a week, but I just had to give it up. Everybody gave up their jobs. And this is the amazing thing. We didn't know what to do or where to go. So we actually laid a map of Canada on our living room table, and then the four of us were in the kitchen. We went in one by one and went over to the table map with our hand. And every one of us, the four of us, ended up feeling something coming from the same area, little corner of British Columbia. And we'd never been further than Toronto, and we hadn't got much money or anything. So, but we gave up everything, bought a 27-year-old farm truck, packed 4 tons into a 2-ton truck and just got on the road, and 7 days later arrived in BC.
How long have you been in BC now?
About 5 years now.
And what's been your experience so far?
Well, when we originally got here, we arrived into a town called Kelowna, which is the Okanagan Valley, and we ended up opening a metaphysical restaurant, which was a place of miracle. I mean, you have to read the book to find out in detail about this, but it was just absolutely beautiful. We had gatherings there. We had over 100 people a month in these gatherings where we had guest speakers to do with every subject you could think of, from Tibetan bells and native medicine wheels to Canadian detox to talks on the military and everything. It was just phenomenal. But we had forest fires that hit that area a year later, and we lost everything because everybody went bankrupt. The whole area was just devastated with forest fires and ended up closing down. There was no tourists, no income. So it was gone, and that put me through an extremely bad depression, probably the worst depression I've ever had in my life. I felt that I was trying to save the world and had lost everything. We couldn't even afford to go bankrupt. We lost all our possessions. Were in the restaurant. Our car was repossessed. It was pretty bad. And then after that, my back went out seriously. So it was a pretty down time. And that's what made us to move to Nelson, BC, which is where we are now. I felt like I'd failed in Kelowna and I'd let everyone down, and I crawled under a shell to hide. And then 2 years later, after going through this depression, I actually started to look back. We actually went on welfare, and being on welfare was such an eye-opener. To see how all my life I've been surrounded by multimillionaires and, say, a lot of famous people. And I've been in restaurants where people have spent $20,000 on a dinner for four. I mean, you think, how the hell could they do that? But when wine is $8,000 a bottle, it's pretty easy.
Yeah,
and I've seen people spend millions and millions and millions. Oh, unbelievable things I've seen. Things that some people should never see in a lifetime. And so I started reflecting then that going on this welfare, like, we couldn't pay electricity bill once. And I went to see the people and I said to them in the offices, look, I need time to pay this bill. I can't afford it. It's only $150. And they said to me, well, you pay it, otherwise it's cut off. And if it's cut off, you've got to pay $50 reconnection fee, plus $500 deposit because it's been cut off, plus the bill of $150, which is $700. So I thought, hang about, if I can't pay $150, how on earth did these people expect me to find $700? And it's that started to make me realize the hypocrisy of all this help that's supposed to be out there. And then looking back on my life and going through all the things that I'd seen and heard, that's what made me decide to sit down and write this book. And that's what I did. It took me 4 years to write it, and now it's out for all to see.
How does the public get a hold of the book, John? Why don't you...
This is the thing. It's talk about life experiences. I mean, this book's a fly on the wall's eye view of lifestyles of the rich and famous, I suppose. And it's a tell-it-as-it-is book. I hold back nothing. And that's probably why I couldn't get a mainstream publisher to do it. But I did get a publisher to print it for me, and he had to take a few words out here and there. And the book is a really good presentation. It's all done correctly by, say, a proper publisher, but it isn't mainstream. And this is it. I'm now finding another aspect in my life is now the book is born and out there for all the world to see. How do people get hold of it? I can't afford to buy copies and to send out. And you can only get it through one source because it's not a mainline publisher. So I've even contacted all the media, and the main media won't touch it. Present company accepted, of course. But the local newspaper did an amazing write-up. The local radio station read the book and just absolutely raved about it. I've sold 100 copies locally, and the feedback has been out of this world. It's changed people's lives.
Well, let's
tell everything that people think.
How
do you get it?
Yeah, we need a way to get it.
Yeah, well, there's only one way, and that's through, you'd have to make a note of this, everybody. It's bookstream.biz. That's the only way of getting all of this book or from me.
Well, John, there are so many, there's so much free web space available. Why haven't you, gone on the net and, opened a, you know, there is a lot of free web space. And of course, you have absolutely nothing. All you have to do is make the pages. Why haven't you done that?
I'm not that computer literate, I must admit. And, to tell you the truth, I've got a family of four, and my two oldest daughters are now back home with their grandchildren. We haven't got a lot of money. It cost us every penny that we could save to get the book published. But that was our main priority, was to get the book out there, and it's, and say now it's done. Now, as time goes on, I'm hoping that it'll pick up. Although I have got some good news, for people. A New York literary agency has picked it up, and they sent me a contract, and they're looking for a mainline publisher as we speak.
Oh, wonderful.
So you never know. Working class hero might just get out there.
John, listen, why don't you send me an email with that website that you have on it.
Sure, I'll do that.
And I will put your book, a link to it.
Thank
you. I'll put a link to your to that website on my website.
Terrific.
Now, just make sure you get that to me. And we'll see what we can't get done here. Folks, tune in to What a World Radio website. You know, when you get a chance, I'm redoing the website right now, and I should have it done in about a week. And I'll probably try to get an author section fixed up, and we'll get John's link on there. Well, John, I thank you for coming on the air tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I wish you luck in the future, and keep on writing, Guy.
Okay, one tidbit for your listeners here. Celine Dion, of course, everyone's heard of. Well, I was her driver for 8 years, so that gives you some idea of some of the things I've seen and people that I've driven around.
Well, you've had an exciting life, John. I mean, you've got about 30 lifetimes in one.
That's what I believe. Don't worry, I've felt most of them, with anything.
Well, keep your chin up, and like you said before, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, you can get out of bed tomorrow morning and you might have 16 agents and publishers ringing your phone off the wall.
Okay. Well, it's thanks to people like you that the word's getting out there, and I really, really appreciate the time you're giving me now.
Well, appreciate having you on the show. You have a wonderful evening, John, and thank you so much. Good
thank
night
you.
To you.
Goodbye to all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks, I need to make contact here with the producer so we can get our next guest on. Although I want to shift wires here. Hold on 1 second. Let me get Don on the air here.
Okay.
Don, I need to shift with Jill. We're kind of stuck in the booth here, and I want to smoke a cigarette, and I don't want to gag her to death. So let me make a shift, and then we'll get the next guest on.
You got it.
Melanie. Yeah. Okay, why don't you go ahead and ring her up?
Okay.
Okay, folks. Get back. Let's see.
Yeah.
Hold on here.
Okay.
Our phone number is... All right, put me back on the air.
Okay, you're on the air.
All right, I'm on the air. Folks, we're fishing around for an author. We seem to have one missing. Melanie Marie Aridner. I've been trying to dial your number. We keep getting a phone out of order. I'm going to give you a phone number to call, and you can call into us toll free at 1. Oops, excuse me. Hold on. Wait a minute. Toll free at 514-481-8081. Nope, wait a minute, I still got the wrong number here.
888-268.
I got so many numbers, folks. That's the producer. Okay, here it is. Melanie, if you're listening, dial 1-888-268-4313, and I'll hang on the phone here for you to call in. We've been trying to dial your number, Melanie, and we cannot get a hold of you. We keep getting this disconnect. So, folks, bear with me while we try to connect with Melanie. It's been an interesting evening. I got to tell you a strange story. Now that I'm on the air and I've got a captive audience, we have authors. Boy, do we have authors. Now, you would think that it would be easy to get authors to come on the microphone and do their stuff. Well, let me tell you, I have tried almost desperately. Now, I wound up going to a number of websites where authors kind of gather and they kind of talk to each other about how their books are going and so on and so forth. And somehow, my request to authors telling them about What a World Radio, somehow this got interpreted by publishing companies as me being a book agent. And so I get about maybe 5 to 10 emails a week from wannabe authors who are looking for an agent and they think I'm an agent. So all you authors out there, I'm not an agent. I'm simply looking for people who want to come on the air for a few minutes and promote their book. Melanie Marie Ridner, if you are out there, please call 1-888-268-4313. Let me give you a little bit of a further update on what's going on in history. On this date in history, in 1947, was the very first commercial television station west of the Mississippi, and it began operation in Hollywood. Also, for all you jet folks, the very first commercial jet plane, the Boak Comet, was put into service in 1952 on this date. Fantastic, huh? And do you know the name George P. Metzke? You should. Very famous. He was called the Mad Bomber in Connecticut. And I think he got charged with planting 20 or 30 bombs. That was long before the terrorist bombing and all that. He was just crazy. Just a person who liked to blow things up. Also in 1968, on today's date, was the debut of Rowan and Martin. Oh, God, I love that show. I especially love the Fickle Finger of Fate Award. And, boy, I think Blogging Broadcasting Service ought to give that award out to a few individuals and maybe corporations and our government officials. I have no idea where Melanie is. I'm not really sure what to do at this point. Let me see if I can send a message out to her. We'll try a new approach here, folks. Hold on 1 second. Let's see if we can do it this way. Okay. I am typing a email as I'm talking to you on this radio. Melanie, call us. Let's see, I'm typing an email and trying to speak at the same time. I got wires all around me. Try to call. Your phone was disconnected. Isn't this weird, folks? I live in a very strange world. But not near as strange as my producer. Now, his world is weird. He does not stop. Okay, I'm sending this out to Melanie right now. There it goes. I have no idea what's going on. I'll wait a couple more minutes, and then if we don't hear from Melanie, we're going to call it a night. Let's see. What would you like me to do, folks? A little song and dance. Hold on. We've got a message coming in. The message coming in is possibly on a different phone on a different email. No, I checked them. And the phone number that I have is consistent. through all the emails. So I really do not know what to do at this point. I find it very bizarre that I could, because I actually sent out an email about 2 days ago and said, this is the phone number we have. Is this correct? And as far as I know, everything was correct. So I have no idea what's going on. Let me tell you a little bit about what's going on with, let me check this number again. I keep looking at it. Boy. That's the number I got. Anyway, let me tell you what's going on with Blogging Service. As you are aware, blogging is growing in leaps and bounds. Not really enough work for Don Newsom to do. He's made a request to me that if anybody has stuff that they would like him to work on, I'd be glad to do it. I mean, he's just hanging out, you know, most of the time, playing with the dog, drinking coffee, and kind of getting bored. So and if Winfrey is listening, Win, if you got anything you want Don to do, you know, like rat dead fish or whatever.
You're killing me.
send them on in, folks. Okay, let's see. What else have we got going on? You know what? We need volunteers. All kidding aside, we need volunteers. Let me get on my soapbox for a minute. What the hell? Don is already paying for this. I might as well use the time. Folks, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, how many times have you said, gee, why doesn't somebody do something about that? Well, have you done anything about, quote, that? You know, the big that, the that that drives everybody nuts? Like, let's try to find a way to help some of the impoverished people in our country. Let's find a way to get spiritual messages out, which is what Blogging Broadcasting Service is all about and all the wonderful shows. Are you listening to the shows? Are you getting information from them? You know, there's no charge for any of that. We don't say, hey, if you're going to listen to this show, you know, you got to pay a certain amount of money. But you know what? Ethically speaking, if you're listening to these shows and you're getting something out of it, how about giving something back? Call in. Call in on our free toll phone number and say, hey, what can I do to help? A little volunteer effort. For instance, I can use a couple of broadcasters for the evening news. And that's a lot of hard work. It's not just a matter of jumping on a microphone. It takes 3.5 to 4 hours to put a newscast together. And so if you would like to try your wings at broadcasting, give us a shout. Go to blogginservice.com. You'll find all kinds of email addresses. Get in touch with me. Send me an email. Please send me an email. And say, hey, I want to get involved. I want to help out. Is there anybody out there in the listening audience that is willing to stand up and be counted and say, you know, I've been listening to these shows and I'm getting all this spiritual help. Maybe I should give something back. Now's your time, folks. Call in, write in, send up smoke signals. We'll track you down. Don could use the help. I could use the help and a whole bunch of other people. Don, are you listening in?
Oh, absolutely.
Now that I've got you as a captive audience, did you get a copy of the new newsletter done by Amy?
Okay, bear with me. I'm going to come in the front way.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Is that a little better? Yes, much better. Don, did you get a copy of the newsletter from Amy?
I actually did. In fact, it was already sent out to everybody. It was fabulous.
Oh, wonderful.
You didn't get a copy?
Oh, I haven't checked my, it went to Earthlink. It goes to my Earthlink mail, and I just haven't had the time to.
Yeah, it's already.
Great to look at it. If I go look at that email, I'm going to have to answer everything that's there.
Yeah. Well, it's archived, too, so.
Posted. I'm glad you got it out.
Yeah, she did a fabulous job. Amy, we love you. We really do. Amy and Chris, fabulous people.
I'm trying to get it out to Melanie. Let's see. Your phone is disconnected. We tried. Okay.
Well, this is quite a move we got coming up here soon.
You're getting the moon already?
The move? It's quite the move. Yeah. Nevin.
Tell the folks a little bit about where you're going, Don.
Oh, well, it's where we're going. Actually, folks, we're moving to Paradise, California. We're going to be setting up shop there, putting in a little studio with an office. It's a nice place. And my brother, Douglas Newsom, and myself and my family are going to be moving there. And Nevin Campanella and Jill will be moving with us. And we're all going to be one big happy family. And it's going to be terrific because we're going to have a chance to build something here that's going to grow by leaps and bounds this year, and this way we all get a chance to jump into it and have some fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. Of course, the move's going to be a bit crazy, with all work and trying to get a full family out and four kids over to California and all the junk that, of course, loads us down. It's going to be interesting.
Don, what's your expected time for getting to California?
Well, we actually believe we'll be there, my guess, well, we're closing on the 31st, so I think we're probably going to start the trek the first week in February and be totally in by the second week in February, let's call it.
Oh, fantastic.
And then everything will be set up for you, and I'm hoping you'll be there, brew it, because I think everything will be set up. It's just a matter of when you're able to make the trip.
Oh, we have no problem in taking off. Whenever the Don is putting a place on the property for Jill and I to put our trailer on. We've been RVing for the last 11 years. We're used to the trailer, and Don and his brother, in their generosity, have asked us to go to California with them, and willing to tolerate two old people by even giving them building a trailer pad. So it's an expense to them. Don, I have a burning question I'd like to ask you.
Yeah.
How did you arrive at Paradise? First of all, it's a beautiful name.
Oh, it's a beautiful city, town actually, not really a city.
How did you arrive at that? Why Paradise?
We wanted to go to Mount Shasta, and I was feeling the urgency to move out of Texas, and it's getting overwhelming urgency to move out of Texas. And folks, don't ask me why. I mean, people say, are there earth changes coming? Maybe. Are they going to be bad? Maybe. You know, If you're walking down Montana and the flat road and the flat fields and it's your time to die, well, believe me, a meteorite's going to strike you right in the head. And if it's not your time to die and you're standing on top of a volcano, well, you'll somehow live. So it's I'm feeling an urgency to move for other reasons. And I think a lot of that has to do with a mission that's going to unfold over there. It just feels very important. So we decided to go to Mount Shasta. We went up there. Beautiful little town, but to try to raise four kids there under seven, not a good idea. The school system isn't really as robust as we'd like. The city doesn't offer, I think, enough amenities that would make a family comfortable with young ones. So we were, after 3 days, we figured that's it, we're gone. We'll just move to North Carolina. And so we were driving back from Mount Shasta, and my brother had a recollection of a town my father had driven him through when he was younger. He said, there was a town called Paradise I remember driving through. And I said, well, Doug, that's impossible. He said, why? I said, because you and I have never left each other's sight since we were kids, and we've always went everywhere together. How could you have went with Father on this drive when I never went? And he said, no, no, Don, I remember this drive. And it was a beautiful little town. Of course, he decided then we had to take the detour. And as soon as we got right next to the city limit or the town limit sign, Doug looked at me and said, this is where we're going to live. And I looked at him and I said the same thing. I said, yep, this is it. And it was just that weird. And the synchronicities, we stopped. We got a we stopped in at the first real estate location. The guy happened to be, it was the first time working there. He just got his license. He just started working. He was a spiritual guy. He happened to know the people at the radio station. He said that spiritual people were coming in, of course, from the people in his office had been telling him many spiritual people had been moving into the area. And we just loved the guy, and we showed him the house we wanted from a picture, and he said, it's not available. It's occupied. And why don't we look for other homes? So we spent 3 days looking at other homes, and the last day, we, in the hotel, my brother and I said, well, you know, if we can't get that first home, we're out of here. We're gone. We're going to North Carolina. So we called in the light, my brother and I, and it was the first time we were ever laying next to each other in a hotel room and actually called in the light together. It was quite a feeling. And this entity showed up between us. And what I mean by entity is it was a fuzzy mass ball of light energy, shadowy light energy. It's hard to describe, but it was moving between the two beds. And my brother said, do you see that? And I said, yeah, what the heck is that? And Doug puts his hand over and he says, look, it's moving. And it was moving around the bed and around, you know, it was the strangest thing. So we both noticed it. And, at that point, you know, we looked at each other and we said, you know, there's something to this. We're going to get this home. And, the home that the guy says is not available. It's going to be ours. And we both just knew at that moment it was going to be ours. Well, the next morning, we went to look at the last home on our list, and we asked about the first home we looked at. And come to find out, he says, well, the home is, no, it wasn't occupied. The computer was mistaken. In fact, it was not only not occupied, the occupants had already moved out and were willing to sell it at a ridiculous price because they already had another home that they were paying on. And we went there and fell in love immediately. I mean, we knew it. And the weirdest part was it had two or three llamas on the property. And, of course, we have a beauty company called Llamas Beauty International. And, I mean,
well, talk about synchronicity.
Well, see, that's the weird part. And what gets even weirder is we made him an offer, which was ridiculous. I mean, it was ridiculously low. They not only took it, I asked about if the llamas came with it, and they said absolutely. So, there you go.
So the llamas are still on the property?
Yeah, they're being tended by the neighbor.
Oh, fantastic.
We're going to have llamas there, and it's beautiful. It's a nice fenced-in area. We got two beautiful acres and a creek running on the bottom, and it overlooks a canyon. It's three stories with glass, glass doors, French glass doors running from left to the right side of the house, from the floor to the ceiling on all three floors.
Wow.
That's beautiful. And, we got it for $148 or $50-something dollars a square foot, which is just insane in that area. Insane. And
are you going to be lowering the microphone to me on the stream so while I'm fly fishing, you're going to try to get me to do the radio show.
Well, it's not that big of a creek. but there
you have to get a long wire.
That's right. Well, there's lots of good fishing areas out there, and it's going to
be
fun.
Yeah, there's Lake Paradise. I've already investigated.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Lake Paradise has wonderful fishing, and in fact, there are quite a few fly fishing streams in the area coming down out of the canyon. So
yeah, yes.
I just have to have a ball. And folks, I'm going to be teaching Don how to do fly fishing.
That's right.
I can never get him away from the computer.
Yes, we'll have my brother there full time, and I'm looking forward to being able to have an hour a day or something to myself where I can relax, be with my children, and maybe take a day off here and there and fish.
Oh, it'd be wonderful. Well, Don, I think we've taken up the hour. Melanie hasn't called in. I sent her an email. There is no response, so I'm not really sure what has happened.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Oh, Don, it's always a pleasure. Folks, that's the end of it for this evening. I don't even have my message board up in front of me. I wish you all well and safe passage on your journey home. Good night, folks, and thank you so much for listening.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.